1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Movie Tavern by Marcus. This new year, purchase a 2020 Ultimate Popcorn Tub. Unlimited popcorn for only $4.95 every visit for the whole year. Because movies never tasted so good.
Yes! Here we go. On three. Time for music news. Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Very good. You staying warm this morning?
Give each other Valentine's today?
We were forced to do that in grade school kind of thing, but not lately.
Yeah, not so much.
You don't have to bring in the little cards to everybody at the station?
No.
If you bring one, you have to bring one for everybody. It's the rule.
You do.
That's the rule. Not going to do that.
Here's a treat. Nothing for you. Here's a treat.
Wouldn't childhood have been a lot more fun and honest if we had been able to do that?
Yeah, probably. It would have got us used to being friended and unfriended on Facebook.
I know. That would have been much better training.
Right. Instead of, you got to be friends with everybody or nobody.
Everybody gets a Valentine. You put one in like I told Brian the other day, it was kind of weird giving my best friend Jim Henderson a Valentine. You know, or Larry Larson or Curtis Carruthers, you know, and their little envelope, their little receptacle that we would make in art class. But I always liked giving Kathy Fink the biggest one I had.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, you got there were different sizes, right? You got a box of them.
Some were uniform size.
Right. You gave the tiny ones to the insignificant people in your life, you know? there was a pecking order when it came to Valentine's, let's be honest.
You mean nothing to me. Take this tiny Valentine.
You found the good funny card for the people you like the best.
Yes. Let's talk about some of the Oscars here.
Sure.
The music, especially.
Yeah, it was a big year for music at the Oscars. I mean, it was, you know, there was a lot of good music. Big surprise, of course, with Eminem coming out at the end.
That a showstopper? Would you call that a showstopper when Eminem
That was a showstopper because they had done a great job. It was completely unexpected. Even Questlove, who was the house DJ, had the dressing room next door to where they kept Eminem, and he didn't know about it. He didn't figure it out till after the performance.
How did they get him?
Because I heard him on the Tonight Show talking about how he thought it was odd because it was labeled for Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he was wondering why there was so much security around, Lin's dressing room. He didn't seem like the kind of guy who would need that. But it turned out that's where they stashed Eminem.
How did they get him in and out of the building with no one seeing him?
It was, that was a real feat. And, the performance, I know there are some who slammed it. I thought the performance was really good, and I just thought the surprise factor and, of course, seeing Martin Scorsese's face in the middle of all that was priceless.
Marty, what was his reaction?
You could see the whole way they were panning the audience. There was such a almost generational divide between those who were just excited and getting off on it and people like Scorsese who were clearly confused.
Marty didn't get it?
Oh, no.
Really?
He looked almost scared.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah,
really?
Go back, find it and go back and look. It was really funny.
Did they show Tarantino's face? How did he look?
Tarantino was fine with it. There were others who were losing their mind, a lot of the younger actors and actresses.
Yeah, it was a big deal having him bounce out
there.
There
were people who looked really bemused, like, okay, this is great, but why? Because, it wasn't a big anniversary year or anything.
That was the question.
Well,
why?
That was it. And, the answer is as simple as Eminem has a new album out that he's trying to promote, and his people made an overture to the Academy. And they said, yeah, that'd make for great TV.
And timing is everything when it comes to showbiz. Billie Eilish released last night?
Last night, yeah. We got the new Bond theme. She put it out. She had teased it the day before, No Time to Die.
I think it sounds good. I think it sounds very Bondy.
No, it sounds like, restrained Bondy. It doesn't go for that big end of song crescendo that so many of the Bond songs do, but I think it's a good tune. Nevertheless, I think it's, it sounds like her, and it maintains her character, but it does fit the Bond theme. The movie, of course, No Time to Die, comes out April 10th. She and her brother are going to be performing it at the Brit Awards this coming Tuesday.
She is the youngest person to do a Bond theme song. She's 18.
And an interesting choice because, I mean, you know, there are a lot of hot pop stars. I mean, she's obviously after the Grammys. You know, she may be the hottest of the moment, but they made this deal before the Grammys. So they, you know, the Bond people tend to have their finger on the pulse of pop culture.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, give them credit for being ahead of the curve on that.
Oh, yeah, they've done, you know, you look at the list of people who have done Bond songs, you know, whether it's McCartney, Duran Duran, Adele, Shirley Bassey even, you know, the Bond folks have been on top of things.
You know, what's interesting about James Bond and the whole series of movies is they never try to really trace you back to the beginning of James Bond. Like every now and then they'll reboot Spider-Man or
right.
Batman or something to go back to the beginning.
Nope.
James Bond just always picks up, okay, here's the next thing he does.
Yeah, they just keep going, and he may look different.
Yeah.
But that's part of Bond world.
I'd like to see Bond the day he entered the Academy.
Right, they never do that. They just don't do that.
Showing up
right.
as
and
a...
That would be an interesting thing to do, though. You wouldn't necessarily have to reboot the series in order to do the James Bond origin.
Have a flashback.
Yeah.
Hey, here's good news. Here's good news. Joey Kramer got his old job back.
Yeah. Joey Kramer is playing with Aerosmith again, at least this week. They did it on February 10th, so Monday night, in Las Vegas, and they didn't really make a big deal out of it. Steven Tyler just introduced, you know, Joey Kramer. Apparently he'd been working with the band for some time. First time he had played with them since early 2019 when he had, and then he suffered a shoulder injury, and then of course filed a lawsuit against
him.
So, you know, his drum tech, the guy you saw at the Grammys, was Aerosmith's drum tech, which is a good replacement for him. He knows all the parts. You know, if Joe Perry couldn't do a show, his guitar tech's probably the best choice to go up and play.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose you've been the guitar tech for a while. Maybe you are the best replacement.
Now, listen, all these techs, you know, or most of these techs out there are as good, if not better, as the guys they're teching for.
So Joey Kramer gets his old job back. He's back on the drums for Aerosmith. But David Lee Roth says Eddie Van Halen's not doing well. When you say he's not doing well, I don't know if that means mentally or physically.
You know, and Roth didn't really, you know, really elaborate on that. He was talking to a newspaper in Kentucky before his performance there with Kiss, and you know, his quote was, "My closest, dearest colleague Edward has run up against the wall on turn three. He's not doing well." But then he went on to say, "I've only heard what you've heard. I've not seen him in some time." So, you know, listen, David Lee Roth talks out of many orifices whenever he speaks, and so you have to then take this with a certain grain of salt.
So, you
but don't you also have to give him credit for, you know, he's probably got access.
You know, I mean, he's heard, like, you know, most of us have heard, and some of the people he would have heard from are maybe closer to the source than others.
All right.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, we've heard Eddie Van Halen's not doing well, and we've seen Eddie Van Halen's kind of campaign on social media, tweeting out photos when he's out there in public or when he's with friends and family, you know, trying to say, hey, it's not as bad as you're hearing.
Okay.
So we don't know, although we will say that obviously something is keeping Van Halen off the road. Because we keep hearing about how they're supposed to come out this year, they're supposed to come out, there's a tour announcement, yada, yada, and we're not getting it. So something's keeping them off the road.
Well, this should buoy Eddie's spirits or Eddie's fan spirits. Last time we heard from Lindsey Buckingham, he was recovering from a heart attack, right?
Yep, and now he's going on tour again.
He's going out on tour!
Yep, well, but not a major tour. Lindsey Buckingham has announced a 12-date jaunt this spring. It's going to kick off April 25th in Las Vegas, wrap up May 13th, so like 3 weeks later, and he's going to play in Colorado, Missouri, Georgia, Tennessee, a few of the other states. Basically, you know, this is the trial balloon. 12 dates isn't a huge tour, but it's long enough to figure out how he's doing. It's going to be interesting because what we did hear after that heart surgery was there's a good chance he can't sing again.
Yeah, well, it helps you get your feet back on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, he could always take a singer out. Interestingly, Mick Fleetwood is gearing up for a Peter Green tribute concert, the original guitarist in Fleetwood Mac in England, and he's been doing some press, and he's been asked, you know, he was asked first, have you spoken to Lindsey since the heart attack? No. Simple one-word answer, and he came out and said he'll never play with Lindsey Buckingham again.
Wow. Man, well, yeah. That answers my next question. Is there any chance that Lindsey joins him if they get a residency somewhere?
Yeah, and, you know, according to Mick Fleetwood, no, but I'm sure we could go back
Thank you.
Through the Mick Fleetwood quote bag and finding lots of other things. He said no and never about, and you know, so
right.
So my feeling is no, never say never. On the other hand, I think this was genuinely a bitter one, though. Some of the other schisms may have had a little showbiz in them. I think this one was, there was real rancor here, and there really are bad feelings between them. So
right.
I would call it unlikely, but we know better than to say never.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Bill Wyman is auctioning off 1,000 pieces of Stones memorabilia. Couldn't he just walk through his house and go, "That's Stones memorabilia. Here's some Stones memorabilia. Take this pillow.
Yeah.
It's Stones memorabilia."
Oh,
anything he owned is Stones memorabilia.
That's the deal. He is a collector. He has long been a collector and a great one, and he's published books of his collections, and not just of musical and Rolling Stones memorabilia. The guy's a real history buff, and he has some, you know, really great historical artifacts. But come May, the last weekend of May, the 29th through the 31st, he and Julian Auctions will be doing an auction of 1,000 items, clothing, instruments, other memorabilia, guitar played by Brian Jones at the Rock and Roll Circus, some of Wyman's basses, all sorts of things.
So are these pieces going to have, like, actual history to them?
Oh, yeah, most of them will. You know, it's all stuff he's played on stage, you know,
okay,
or been used on stage.
All right, so let's say I'm a Stones memorabilia collector,
uh-huh,
and I've got some rare pieces. Now, if Bill Wyman's going to release 1,000 more, that's going to drive down the value of my stuff, right? Because there's just more Stone stuff out there.
It sucks to be you, mate.
It does.
Depending on what the piece is, like the guitar Keith Richards played on Jumpin' Jack Flash is still going to be worth a ton of money, you know, and probably more than what you bought it for. So you know, these pieces are, you have to take these pieces, you know, based on their individual histories, not necessarily on how much Rolling Stone stuff is out there.
Okay. How old is Keith Richards?
What is he, like 74?
All right, he's been smoking since,
I don't know, one?
Like, okay, a year and a half.
For like 73 of those years. Now he's giving up cigarettes,
he's
says.
Giving up cigarettes.
He, why?
Was talking, he was talking to a radio station in New York last week when they announced the Rolling Stones tour, and he said he hasn't touched a cigarette since last October. He said it was easier to quit smoking than quitting heroin.
Wow.
Good to know in case you're considering that. And, you know, he was asked about it, and he just said, you know, they've always been part of his life. You know, in England is a big tobacco society still.
Is it really?
You know, he says he's given it up, and, you know, so, you know, clean living guy now. Lord knows there's probably enough tobacco in his system to take care of any cravings he has.
But he has smoked so many cigarettes, he's always going to smell like a cigarette when around him, right?
Oh, sure.
Man.
He's going to smell like death. You know, but he's alive and he's still with us. He is a modern miracle.
Rush, I'm always amazed at how loyal and ferocious Rush fans are about Rush.
Among the most.
Am I right? I mean,
the most.
They are,
and
just,
I'm one of them.
Okay, all right. So I'm glad you said that. So this is good news for them. They have a 40th anniversary album coming out.
Yeah, this is of the Permanent Waves album,
yeah,
from 1980, and this was a big album. This was really their first crossover into the mainstream rock world. They were kind of a niche cult band up to this point, even on like rock radio. You didn't hear a ton of Rush, but this is the one that had Spirit of Radio and really got Rush on the radio. So on March 27th, we're hearing it's a 2-CD, 3-LP deluxe editions, live tracks, unreleased studio material, a special book with photos that have never been received, new artwork. If it's anything like the other box sets, they put out a bunch of anniversary box sets. They did Moving Pictures and A Farewell to Kings, 2112, and they're really nice. And, you know, they give you music that you're happy to have if you're a Rush fan. So I think this will be among them.
Foo Fighters have finished their latest album?
That's what Dave Grohl says. He kind of posted
He would
online.
Know,
yeah,
wouldn't
he? They finished their album, 10th studio album, and, you know, he said that the material stylistically spans the entire career, and also has a song that they've been working on for 25 years. No word on what it's called, no word on the release date, but we'll see. You know, they have a bunch of gigs lined up this year, and it's the 25th anniversary this year also of the Foo Fighters' first album.
So, you suppose it was like constant work for 25 years? Or?
Oh, I mean, he's, you know, listen, this guy's a workaholic. He says he's already working on a documentary film based on van touring, meaning touring in vans, and, you know, with bands remembering their earliest days when everybody piled into a van and it smelled like Keith Richards. And so, you know,
it smells,
you know,
like
very,
Keith Richards in here. That's not good.
No, but very, very romantic, you know, part of a band's career. You know, I think you always remember how much you loved it a lot more than you loved it at the time.
All right, pitchers and catchers reported yesterday in baseball, so we'll finish with this one. Why does Major League Baseball hate the promotion campaign for Roger Waters? What is it?
Well, they basically have been running ads, you know, using their various platforms, social media, online, in other words. You know, basically, AEG Concerts and Roger Waters did an ad buy with Major League Baseball. But Major League Baseball has been pressured, you know, by pro-Israel and Jewish groups to cease this, to cancel this. This is a long-running thing with Roger Waters. And, you know, and the Jewish world is, you know, many feel that his anti-Israel position has really bled over into a blatantly anti-Semitic position. And so the pitch from B'nai B'rith, the pitch from B'nai B'rith to Major League Baseball was essentially that the sport of Jackie Robinson and Hank Greenberg and Sandy Koufax and Roberto Clemente should not be a promotional partner with somebody like Roger Waters.
Wow.
And Major League Baseball concurs.
Okay. All right. Gary, we are out of time.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, be good to your Valentine's today.
But as usual, it has been delightful speaking with you.
And me too.
Thanks, Gary.
Guys, have a great day.
Have a great week.